And again, I'd like to welcome Judge Larry Welch to my left. He'll be joining us for this final case of the day.
Thank you.
All right, so our remaining case for this afternoon is Largan versus Gerritsen Largan. And counsel, are you ready to proceed? All right, you may approach.
May it please the court, opposing counsel. My name is Jennifer Carney, and I represent the appellant, Elizabeth Largan, now known as Elizabeth Barnes. Justice Potter Stewart once said, in speaking of obscenity, I know it when I see it. And I think that the court can apply that same logic to the concept of abuse of discretion. And I think in this particular case, it is very clear that there was an abuse of discretion at the district court level in the issuance of the decree after the trial in this case. Abuse of discretion is a standard that this court uses as well after a de novo review on the record. And the abuse of discretion standard is based on the concept that the ruling that came from the district court is so untenable, so unreasonable, that it defies logic and evidence. And I think that this is a case where that happened. Elizabeth and Josiah were married in 2005, and through the course of their marriage, they had three children, Simon, Cyrus, and Lincoln. Cyrus and Lincoln were both born with significant hearing disabilities. Cyrus is completely deaf, and Lincoln has about 5% of his hearing. Throughout the course of their marriage, Mr. Largan, appellee, was controlling, dominating. He prevented Elizabeth from working, and she spent most of the children's lives as their primary caregiver. The family moved around a lot as a result of Mr. Largan's inability to maintain employment. In approximately 2016, Mr. Largan became ill. He was diagnosed with influenza A and influenza B, and shortly thereafter, something in him switched. He went from being financially controlling and emotionally controlling to being verbally abusive, physically intimidating, physically aggressive. He never put his hands on Elizabeth, but that didn't stop him from intimidating her and making her fearful. He continued to isolate her. He continued to dominate. He continued to restrict her ability to talk to her family, her ability to spend finances of the family, her ability to even go shopping if she needed to. In 2017, appellee moved the family to Pacific Junction, Iowa. Elizabeth testified at trial that she wasn't told the purpose for this move until after they had moved. And she was told by Mr. Largan that the purpose of this move was that he had become fixated on another woman, and he believed that Elizabeth was going to die. Even though he never put his hands on her, his behavior began to escalate even further. And it culminated in two violent acts. One, a home improvement project in which Mr. Largan threw a hammer at the wall in a fit of rage, narrowly missing Elizabeth, and the second where he threw a dresser in her direction, causing scratches and bleeding. Elizabeth decided it was time to leave. So she packed the children, moved back to Nebraska, where she had family and resources, and she and the children resided in Kearney. After Elizabeth left, Mr. Largan's relentless onslaught of emails, each more bizarre than the next, with spelling errors and half sentences and references to God and marriage and how she was destined to come back to him, frightened her so much that she filed for a restraining order. And she did receive a protection order that was granted by Judge John Marsh in 2019. In 2020, she filed for divorce, and for approximately 5 to 6 months, nothing happened in that divorce. Mr. Largan was served with papers, he never filed an answer. She hired new counsel, and a motion for a temporary order was put into place, and Mr. Largan was granted supervised visitation. That was in June of 2021. After that, Mr. Largan did nothing. For 3 years, he didn't see his children. He made no contact. He paid no support. He didn't bother to try to set up visitation, even though he had a court order. Now, at trial, Mr. Largan testified that the reason that he didn't was because of this protection order. But what Judge Lee ignored was the fact that Mr. Largent had been represented by counsel throughout the entire divorce case, that there was no logic or reason for him to not have seen his children.
Didn't he testify that when the order came out that would allow him to have some supervised parenting time, he didn't receive it?
He did testify to that. However, he did also admit on cross-examination that was his initial attorney, and even after getting a second attorney, he still did nothing to enforce his rights under that order.
So the record would reflect that he was represented at the time that that order was issued?
Yes.
And he's claiming that either attorney failed to provide him a copy of that order?
I think at trial he only testified that the first attorney failed to provide him a copy of that order. I do not believe that he imputed that to the second attorney.
Regardless, he never sought parenting time, even though he had an order that permitted it.
That's correct. And as I stated, part of his excuse at trial for why he didn't seek parenting time, was because of this protection order that had been out there. He had violated it twice and had been placed on probation. And his allegation at trial was that because of that, he didn't seek parenting time because he didn't want another violation of the protection order. However, he still took absolutely no steps even after the protection order lapsed and was no longer in place.
Where does that fall into the three-year time frame?
The protection order was granted in approximately, I believe, September of 2019, and it lapsed in October of 2020. Matter came to trial in August of 2022, so it would have been the very first of the 3 years. Throughout the time that Elizabeth lived in Nebraska, not only did Mr. Largent do nothing to enforce his rights in Nebraska, he did nothing to enforce his rights in Iowa either. An entire year went by between when Elizabeth left and when she filed for divorce, where Mr. Largent could have availed himself of the court system to establish bringing the children back or something of that nature. He did none of that either. He sat on his hands and did nothing. And the evidence at trial showed that Elizabeth was the only caregiver for these children for the past 3 years. Where Judge Lee's abuse of discretion comes in is, I believe that Judge Lee's order is based primarily on his disbelief in the protection order that was validly granted. There was no evidence to suggest that it wasn't, and an animus towards Ms. Largent because she had filed for a protection order, and that clouded his judgment with the rest of the case. As a result of that, Judge Lee ordered these siblings who had lived together for their entire lives to be separated. He sent the two younger children back to Iowa with their father, even though that relief was never asked for. In fact, at trial, what the appellee asked for was summertime visitation. He admitted the kids were settled in Kearney and needed to be in Kearney. And he asked for every other weekend, holidays, and summertime visitation. And Judge Lee granted him relief he wasn't asking for without doing any sort of Farnsworth analysis, which I realize the case law says you don't have to do that in an original decree. But
was there a due process issue here in terms of your client not having noticed that custody was even going to be at issue? I mean, he didn't file an answer.
He did not file an answer.
He didn't file a counterclaim.
No, he did not.
He just shows up at trial and says, I'd like summer visitation. And he gets custody, physical custody.
I do think there is an issue there because he wasn't even asking for custody. So I think that it creates an issue of preparation for both sides, even. He walked into that courtroom saying, this is what I want. I want summertime visitation. And so I do think that it did prevent, I think it caused an issue for both sides, truthfully, because neither party was asking for the relief that the judge issued. And I do agree that that prevented Elizabeth from being able to prepare. We would have called witnesses. We would have done other things had we known that that was even an issue in contention, but none of the parties were asking for that.
Because you did not know you would be defending custody.
Right. We didn't have any reason to believe that we would be defending custody. Even through the course of the trial, we had no reason to believe that, based on Appley's statements. Additionally, I think that the court hinged a large amount of its order on this concept that these children could return to the Iowa school for the deaf, but had no evidence to back that up. There was nothing that was presented to demonstrate that these kids were actually eligible to be re-enrolled in that class, that they were able to be re-enrolled in the school, or that they did well when they were in that school. The only evidence presented at trial, which was uncontroverted, was that the children had adjusted well to Kearney and were doing great in the Kearney schools, and that they had the services that they needed in the Kearney schools. So even that seemed arbitrary and capricious on its face, because the court made a ruling without any evidence whatsoever, which, again, is an abuse of discretion. It makes that ruling unreasonable. I do not think, Your Honors, that... I will tell you this. Judge Lee's order was very difficult to write around. I know there are a lot of case laws on point, or cases on point to a lot of the findings that he made. But abuse of discretion also requires the totality of the circumstances. But more importantly, it also requires the concept of best interest. And I see that I'm just about out of time, so I'll stop there. Thank you.
Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Mitchell Stelnick. I am the attorney for the appellee, Josiah Gerritsen Largen. This was a divorce action. The appellant, however, only appeals custody and parenting time determinations, so I'm going to limit my discussion to that. As Ms. Kearney stated to you, the court reviews these actions de novo on the record, and it's typically affirmed absent an abuse of discretion. We contend that the trial court did not abuse its discretion in awarding the custody of the two youngest children to the appellee.
Mr. Stelnick, can you address the issue that we were talking about just now, that your client never filed an answer, never filed a counterclaim, the mother in this case was never put on notice that custody essentially was going to be an issue. Isn't there a due process problem here?
Well, I disagree with the contention that she was never put on notice of that. I was hired immediately prior to a pretrial conference. We had a pretrial conference. The issue, and I don't recall if Judge Lee listed custody as an order, as an issue for trial, but it was certainly raised. I mean, I don't dispute that we weren't expecting that we would likely be granted custody.
Raised where in the record?
Well, I don't recall if it was the pretrial conference. My recollection was in chambers, so if it's in the record, it's going to be listed only on whatever pretrial order there was, and I don't recall if that's part of this court's transcript.
Certainly did not pray for it in an answer, didn't file an answer.
That's correct. That's correct.
And didn't, during the course of trial, request physical custody.
I disagree with that as well, because I recall specifically in my closing argument that I asked either that he be granted the summer visitation that was discussed, or in the alternative that he be granted the custody.
In your closing argument.
That's correct.
What's the evidence?
I'm certain his testimony indicated he would like to have the custody of him. Again, that wasn't our expectation at the time, but it was certainly, he did raise it as an issue as part of his testimony. But
besides the court in its order spends some time basically saying it disagreed with the protection order. Mm-hmm. And saying that there was parental alienation going on. What evidence was there for parental alienation in the case?
My understanding of the district court order regarding that related to, there was indeed evidence that a protection order was requested and granted. I think the evidence also indicated that he didn't contest the ex parte entry of that order. The testimony further indicated that the protection order was only for the appellant, not for the children, but that he had made efforts to communicate with the children and send them gifts, which were then reported to law enforcement by the appellant. And he was, in his testimony, he believed he was charged with violating the protection order as a result of sending gifts.
Because he sent one to the mother, right, as well.
But, who else could he send it to? Is the difficulty. That was his testimony, though, and that's what he was concerned with, further violations.
One correction, though.
Yes, sir.
An ex parte protection order was granted, but
yes,
then
sir,
he came back and contested it. And ultimately, the court removed the protection order as it relates to the kids, but kept it in favor of Elizabeth. Isn't that the testimony?
I do know that he testified that as it was renewed each successive year, he didn't contest it until the one immediately prior to the trial. You could be correct on that initial one. I'm going to be honest, I don't recall that specifically from the record. But I do know that he, until immediately before the trial in this case, was when he did contest the renewal of the protection order, and that was denied.
What authority is there for a district court judge in this circumstance to completely disregard the findings of another judge in a protection order hearing?
Well, I don't think that, the Judge Lee has the authority to review the evidence on his own, assess the credibility of the witnesses, and he did have to make a determination as to whether or not there was credible evidence of domestic violence, and his order specifically...
That had already been decided.
Well, it had been decided with different evidence before a different judge. He certainly indicated that a different court believed that that was the case, but he, in his own determination of the evidence, which he has, in my opinion, the right to do, and in fact evaluated the witnesses and their own credibility, he determined that it did not occur and that there was not credible evidence of it.
What credible evidence was there regarding the School for Deaf in Iowa being so significant that these boys needed to be split up from their older brother, mm-hmm. be taken from their mother who they'd been with for 3 years without parenting time with their dad, and now go live with their dad and go to this school? What evidence is there in the record that that was in their best interest?
Mr. Gerritsen Largen's testimony. And his testimony also was that he was of the understanding that they would be available to attend the school.
Had he investigated to whether they would be enrolled? Was there any evidence of that?
Other than his testimony, no. But there also wasn't any evidence controverting that either.
What was his testimony specifically that demonstrated it was in their best interest?
Well, I don't think he specifically used the words it's in their best interest, but there was testimony of a significant amount of special services that were required for the minor children at
in
the current
Kearney.
School. Yes, right. And I think that there was testimony from the mother as to difficulty that she was having finding those services or finding other care. And Mr. Largen, Gerritsen Largen, testified as to what services were available when they were living in Iowa. And so I think the court probably took that evidence and made its determination based on that.
Mr. Stelick, with regard to another issue, the evidence, at least as given to us by Ms. Carney, is that your client never provided any support, and there, I guess there's a little evidence that he sent a few gifts. Is that correct?
I don't recall that a support order was entered in these. I think that's probably accurate.
Okay, so
he
didn't have an order, so he didn't pay. He didn't pay anything voluntarily to support his children.
I don't recall that their evidence was that he was.
What evidence did he present that he was financially capable of supporting the children?
He testified as to his employment. He continued to be employed, my recollection was, throughout.
Okay.
And I think the court took all of that into account when making its child support calculation. The issue he would have had in trying to informally send support would be the same issue that he was running into with trying to having communication with the children and sending them gifts.
But that's not unusual, and he had counsel that could tell him how to accomplish
sure.
those things.
But
he still didn't do anything. Either in terms of seeing the kids or supporting the kids.
Well, he did provide testimony as to why he didn't, and he was concerned about violating the protection order between himself and the appellant, which was still in effect until the eve of trial.
Well, there was court-ordered visitation, though, after the temporary order was issued, and during that period of time, he didn't see him as well, correct?
That is true, yes, sir.
So the court ordered joint legal custody and
yes.
giving mother physical custody of the oldest child and father physical custody of the younger two boys, correct?
That is correct.
Who had the final say? Because I have to admit that in reading the parenting plan, there seems to be a conflict in who gets final say. How was your reading of it?
I don't recall that, but in advising my client, I would advise him that he probably had the final say as it relates to the youngest two, and that the mother probably does as
it. Because it doesn't say that. It just says that your client has final decision-making authority concerning the parenting functions to raising the children, mm-hmm. presumably all of them, in one place. And then under the parenting responsibilities, it says the mother shall have the final say in choices regarding children's education, religious upbringing, etc. So which is it? How is one to know in this?
Well, that's not an issue that I had noted in my preparation, but certainly if that's the way that it's drafted, it would need to be reformed at least, and I would suggest that under the circumstances of the present order that the mother should have the final say for the oldest child and the father should have the final say for the youngest two children.
Well, is it a problem that the way he set up, the way the trial judge set up the visitation, that other than holidays, the children never see each other because they basically are exchanged, the two younger children having visitation with the mom at the same time the older child's having visitation with the dad?
That could be an issue that this court also could choose to address. I think in many ways the reason the oldest child remained in Kearney is probably the same reason that much modification as a practical matter as it relates to him isn't going to matter a whole lot. Because of his age, he's going to be out of high school soon. He's probably got his own things that he's going to want to be doing. But that's certainly something the court could address if it chooses to reform some of the parenting plan. But I would ask the court to determine that the trial court did not abuse its discretion and ask that the court affirm the judgment of the trial court. Thank you.
Can I, just one last question, Mr. Stalick. Am I reading this correct, that the judge set it up so that mom would have the younger boys for Christmas of 2022 and then dad would have the oldest son at the same time, so the boys again are split during a Christmas holiday? Am I reading that right?
That's not a detail that I had caught, because it's probably something that everybody had assumed that the holidays were supposed to be together. So,
would you agree that would not be in their best interest?
I would so agree, and would believe that, assuming the court keeps the general parenting time set up with the younger children with the father and the oldest child with the mother, that the weekends should generally be together and that the holidays should generally be together.
Would you agree that qualifies as an abuse of discretion by the trial court?
I would agree that that particular issue would, but I would suspect that that wasn't something that was intentional either.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
No.
Okay. Thank you. We took him a little bit over. How much time did we go over?
1 minute, 2 seconds.
1 minute, 2 seconds. Thank you. You may have 1 minute, 2 seconds if you would like to respond.
No, I'm fine. Thank you.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. The matter is submitted, and your excuse.
Thank you both.